Ladies and gentlemen, to this week's or this month's Discography Blast from the past, we're doing an often talked about band, but somehow we've gone through, I think we're hitting 600 episodes now for albums that we have somehow talked about this and done. This is one of the rare undone bands. But with me, as always, are my brothers in arms, Gabe and Ben, or David. Ben is out on assignment again, fighting monsters and wizards and wherever he must be. He's keeping you safe, doing his part.
Keeping you safe from Massachusetts metalcore.
Exactly.
I don't think he can save us from that.
It's not late. Possible. Bunch of mass holes.
I think Ben sees it as God-given right to save us from it.
I feel like my only shot is some sort of divide and rule strategy where Boston and Western Mass go at each other's throats, but we'll see how that plays out with Gabe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Big hardcore has entered into the chat.
Yeah, we'll see how he, I don't know. Like, I feel like Gabe could probably get into metalcore. I think this metalcore might be a stretch primarily on the, this is a little more on the emo side, I would say. Like, the lyrics are a lot of like.
That's accurate.
Yeah, like.
It's definitely accurate.
Yeah, so like, that's this entire genre of metalcore. Like, it's got that touch, like you guys said with Trivium, but like, that's a little bit, this is definitely like every song is some form of like relationship song.
It is. Except did you say what band it was, though?
I have not.
I was going to say, we're like launching into it. We're talking about geography and...
Oh, yes. So we are doing Killswitch Engage. I've chose a special, I guess, four album run, which I think kind of gives a perfect mirror of kind of what the band experience overall has been, because they've had a couple of lineup changes, like in vocals especially, with a singer coming back, and I kind of split the difference on which singer I was going to pick with. So it's kind of get a little... version of Three Tails, because I think Jesse's vocals on the first album and the last album are very different.
They are.
So
I notice you also skipped the alleged Lemon 2009's, once again, self-titled confusingly.
Yeah.
Killswitch Engage.
Killswitch Engage 2.
The Reckoning, except people seem to hate that album.
It's not good. Like, there's a couple of good singles off of it, but the rest of it's not good.
We can maybe chat about it briefly between albums. 2 and 3, yeah. Right? Isn't that where it falls? Oh, no, excuse me, between 3 and 4.
Yeah,
where falls it is.
Between the 3rd and 4th album we're doing.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to it in preparation for this. I don't know if you guys did.
I never have. I've listened to some other stuff. Like, I've listened to the 2019 album, but I've not listened to 2009's Alleged Lemon, Killswitch Engage 2, The Reckoning.
Yeah, but Gabe, any overall thoughts?
Yeah, I have a couple. I mean, I think that this is the most time I've spent with the band before, and I hadn't really heard them until a couple of years ago when I had asked my friend Jeremy to name some top metal albums that he had, and he didn't mention any albums, but he basically just named singles off of The End of Heartache. So I went and listened to that back then. And I would say that, like, you know, on paper, this is something that I probably could like, because there are certain pieces of it that I do generally like. And, you know, when I was younger, I was listening to more, you know, straight ahead emo stuff in the 90s. And then I sort of got introduced to metalcore through Jeremy, but I didn't really listen to it, you know, until much more recently. But what I think is pretty interesting and pretty true about that genre, and we are talking about melodic metalcore here, we're not talking about sort of the convergent things.
It still falls on the metalcore spectrum, but it's the very far end of the other spectrum.
The converged stuff is what Gabe had to be standardized tested on as part of the Boston Public Schools curriculum.
Right. I was waterboarded with it.
Waterboarded with converged, not Killswitch Engage.
But a while back, I was listening to this guy on YouTube talk about, you know, various metal subgenres, and this guy goes by acculturation. So O-C-C-U-L-T, acculturation.
Got it.
And his video is called Metalcore Complete Breakdown. And his definition, or like sort of part of his definition of metalcore, melodic metalcore, is that it's about determination and perseverance in relation to other people, usually about a struggling relationship or about expressing devotion to someone who is gone, you know, whether, you know, deceased or no longer your loved one. So I think that hits the nail pretty squarely on the head as to like where we are thematically for this journey. And I think if you're not into that kind of topic, you may be in for a very long ride.
I don't want to overplay this, but I'm not the first one to wonder this. I was reading one review that was also pondering, you know, Slayer in the 80s and KSE in the 2000s was aiming at the same audience in terms of, like, you know, sort of pissed off teens and 20-year-olds. But Slayer had this complete apocalyptic, I guess, Cold War thing where all at World War II, all life was going to be annihilated. Whereas this is, as you say, it's about, like, relationships and it's about feelings,
but I think
loss. It's just a very different, you know, notwithstanding the stylistic differences. I mean, just even like what they talk about, it's kind of shocking. It's only 20 years apart.
Yeah, I think part of it is Slayer's Reagan and the, like, the Cold War II, like the return of the Cold War, kind of like that's first and foremost aspect of it, where everybody thought they're going to die, and so definitely add to that. And I think this is coming off of, like, off the coattails of, like, the emo revolution of the early 2000s, sure, in which, in the late 90s, to where you get Fall Out Boy, Green Day, like that turn of punk, where instead of, like, pulling from thrash like Slayer did, they pulled from emo as, like, their punk influence that they built into this.
Yeah, that's already about 90s. So, yeah, that's about, like, a decade before this that started. And that's one of the reasons I did not like this at the time. I'm like, all these major chords, and this sort of, it strikes me as a little whiny. It reminded me of, I say this with love, I appreciate it more now, I guess, but, like, Green Day. I'm like, fuck that. Like, I was definitely team Soulfly, or, I mean, Jesus Christ, I was listening to Mr. Bungle. Like, that's the kind of person I was. So this was not. I had, as we'll talk about, I had one of these albums. It's the only one I ever bought. But just, I have, that's the thing. The other thing is, like, that I couldn't hook onto is I didn't really like hardcore that much either. And we could argue whether there's very much in here. I mean, there's, like, breakdowns and stuff. There's definitely some hardcore elements, but that's not a thing I was going to grab onto either. So if I wasn't here for the emo and I wasn't particularly here for the hardcore, there was not a whole lot left for me to grab onto at the time, yeah. I would say.
I don't think it's just part of it. Cause I feel like, you know, that could you, like, I think if you want a timeline, you have the moment of grunge in the early 90s with, like, Wayne Staley. We talk about his drug addiction, kind of like the emotional kind of, like, feelings you get coming back in the music that starts making some headway that you then see with nu metal and Korn, which then feeds into emo, which then feeds into this. And so, like, I think it's just kind of like this continuation of thing.
Well, when you introduce or reintroduce, depending on your perspective, pop into metal, that's what you're going to get. I mean, it's not just a sound thing and structure, you know, bridge, chorus, et cetera, but theme too. I mean, if you're going to fill a fucking stadium, you can't probably sing about Unit 731 in Manchuria, just as a counterpoint, or anything Cerebral Rot would do. And I say that with tremendous love, but that's probably, I'm looking at Gabe.
You're damn right you do.
But that is not going to fill the Astrodome. I'm just guessing in terms of wide popular appeal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think also, like, it's not that far off of what hardcore punk was doing a lot of the time,
for sure.
But not necessarily determination and perseverance in relation to others, but determination and perseverance in relation to yourself, like, you know, kind of overcoming yourself, or, like, kind of, you know, being like the bigger, stronger, better person kind of stuff. And you see that very strongly in other, like, flavors of metalcore, like, you know, the tough guy stuff from, like, Hatebreed going on through, like, fucking Five Finger Death Punch. I mean, like, it's
indeed, I know.
So there is, like, a wide spectrum, and I don't think that everything is as far apart. Like, if you're just talking about music or, like, just talking about lyrics, maybe it is. But you got to look at the total picture, I think.
Yeah, I briefly wondered if this was butt metal. And I don't think
There's definitely some butt rock in here.
Some butt rock in here. I feel like there's latent butt rock happening.
Latent or blatant.
Latent butt rock available on iTunes. Any thoughts on that, Tracy? I know you like this band.
No, I mean, I definitely agree with you. Like, I mean, this is some of the more pop sensible stuff that I think we probably had on the podcast, or probably more mass appeal. Let's go with mass appeal. Like, this is probably
as in Massachusetts,
or large amounts of quantity of people.
Large amounts of quantity of people from Massachusetts, but yes, sure. If you want, we've had like Seven Dust. We've done a few, but I think this is even more popular than that ever was.
Yeah, like the only other band, like, you have Black Album, and then I think probably Five Finger Death Punch. Like, there's not a lot, like, we've done. Like, we've always kind of had played in, like, the killing fields of the deep darn the genre, I guess. It's like, there's 12 people that bought this album and we're two of them.
I mean, Nine Inch Nails. Anyway, the point is
also GNR, but you know.
Yeah, indeed. You know, we've done some pretty huge ones. Fucking Black Sabbath. Anyway, the point is, this was a big deal and it's still going on now. And I know why do you like it, Tracy?
I mean, I was the target audience for this, you know, like I got into them 04, 05, like, because a lot of the, like, their original, like, it was the Howard years where I kind of got in at with the Resident Evil soundtrack and the Freddy vs. Jason. And, like, again, where the soundtrack's better than the movie. And
Freddy vs. Jason. Sorry, I'm just remembering that time. Yeah, indeed. And for so, Jason, like, in Space.
Yeah. So, like, I got into those albums, like, and I found Killswitch through there. And, like, Killswitch, I mean, yeah, like, I was an angsty 14, 16-year-old going through, you know, puberty and learning how to express myself as individual. So, I mean, like, I was the target audience for Killswitch Engage.
No, it's probably better to listen to this at that age than what I was doing, which was like Morbid Angel. Or I don't mean as in better music, but in terms of what that might mean for your psyche. But
yeah, I feel like that's a Freudian slip and you do mean better music, but
no, I don't. I'll die on that hill. But I dislike this less, far less now than I did at the time. For a variety of reasons.
Yeah. Are we ready to get into the first album or?
Let's do it. Your show, man.
All right. The first one I chose was Alive and Just Breathing. It is the second studio album by them, released on May 21st, 2002. The producer for the band was drummer and guitarist Adam Derkowitz. It is the last album that Jesse's on until Disarm the Descent, and coming up in about a decade after this one. It was recorded at Zing Studios, Westfield, Massachusetts. Comes in a runtime of 44 minutes and 57 seconds, and it was released on Roadrunner. The entire band is credited with writing credits on this, with lyrics given to Jesse Leach. And the lead vocals was Jesse Leach. Lead guitar, rhythm guitar was Joel Strotzel. Mike D'Antonio was bass and album artwork. And Adam Derkowitz, I think that's right. It was drums, guitars, piano, backing vocals, production, engineering. A couple extra guests on here is Becca Derkowitz as backing vocals. Phil Labonte from All That Remains is the backing vocals. Tom Gomez does drumming. And Howard Jones does additional lead vocals on a re-recording of Fixation in the Darkness that I think is on the special edition, the 2005 release. Was this y'all's first time with this album?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It was. Right.
So Ben's comments is, if there is an innovation here, it is in the melody of metalcore. I'm sure our brother in the Boston public school system will know if that's true, isn't true. The second album overall, but the first on a major label, produced by the band, you can really tell they were trying really hard to produce something that sounds good. I suppose for an early aughts metalcore album, it kind of succeeds. Well, except most of the songs are a bit flat.
So you, had you heard this at the time, or did you circle back to this?
This was a circle back to it.
That's what I figured. So you came in a little after this. I did. As you said, Howard Jones, right? Is that when you started listening? Yeah.
And so, like, this album, like, coming from the other two, like, Day I Dies and The End of Heartbreak, they're very much, like, this sounds rougher around the edges than what those two do. Like, you can kind of tell that this is their first on a major label. They're kind of still figuring themselves out in the studio. Because I think they really do better job in later albums, but like everything on this album kind of has like a little like fuzzy feel to it, I think, instrumentation wise.
Well, I was very surprised by this one. And I was surprised how much I liked it because it is much more metal than core and it just comes heavy. It's got loads and loads of riffs and the whiny emo stuff is not really there for the most part. And when it is there, I think it's pretty tasteful. It doesn't bother me so much. And I think that, yeah, I mean, there's breakdowns, right? That's sort of like your hardcore signifier there. But I don't know. I think they do a fairly good job of it. And yeah, there's some kind of annoying stuff on there. But man, they really shred. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I like the roughness of this album. His vocals are pretty harsh, but I'm okay with that. Yeah, this was not what I was expecting. I'd really only heard the Howard Jones stuff and some of the later, you know, albums where Leach returned. So, but yeah, I co-sign all that. Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, like this one was, I'm not a big fan of their first album. Like, you can definitely tell that's rough. They're kind of still figuring it out. But it sounds like Killswitch. But I think this is the one where they kind of like, they're starting to get the formula down. They start to kind of know what they want to do with and kind of where they want to go. And so it works out really well, kind of getting it together and kind of like getting what they want to do on it. And I think this album kind of does a good job of that. Now, coming into it, like, I think it took me a little bit to warm up to it, but it has... I do enjoy this album quite a bit, obviously, because I picked it compared to the rest of the discography. Like, I think this might be the second best Jesse album.
What's the first best?
To be discussed later.
I figured. I figured you would.
But yeah, I mean, like, it just kind of shows also, like, where they came from, I think, really well. But, I mean, when you got a band with the... Also, the band is the production chair. Like, the... one of the primary songwriters sitting in the production chair. So, I mean, and he, Adam, goes on to become like this major time figure within all of like that Northeast metalcore scene, because he did production work on All That Remains albums. He did production on a bunch of Shadow Falls albums and a couple of other like bands coming out from that area. So like, he's kind of picked up a man in multiple hats along the way, which where he got to start here.
Are any of them ass hats?
Maybe. Anything else you'd like to say, or?
It's pretty amazing how different Leech's vocals are on the 2013 album. Did you listen to his, I guess they weren't side projects anymore, the other stuff he was doing between that? I mean, that's like an 11-year interval.
So the only thing I've listened to, interesting enough, between the interview, between Jesse's absence, was him and Adam Duckwitz did a album. I can't remember the name of the band. Like, it's on the tip of my tongue, but...
Engagement Switch killed.
Oh, no, I want to see it. Got it here in the playlist. I just got to find it.
As an aside, I want to say that this name is not very good. I'm sort of surprised they had the success they did with this name. Does that make sense? I'm perfectly fine with it, but I listen to fucking death metal. Like, yeah. I'm just a little bit surprised.
I think it's just that, like, just perfect level of edginess, I think.
Sure, I guess so.
Yeah, like, his side project, the only one I dealt with, was Times of Grace, in which that's, Adam Duckwitz wrote the entirety of that album. He's like, I need a singer for this, and reached out to Jesse, and so he came on and did it. And that was in 2011, but that's the only thing I've listened to outside of it. But I would say, I think that is very much more a Ben Speed album, because they do have like this Southern rock country twang mix into it, which it's got like a nice little twist to it.
That's when I think Western Mass, that's what I think, is that twang.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I mean, it's more rural, sure.
Indeed.
We ready to talk about tracks, or?
It's your circus and your monkeys.
Okay. Since Ben's not here to defend himself, he picked three off this album: My Last Serenade, The Element of One, and Without a Home. Yes, I like the palate cleanser, is what he said.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that was all right.
I liked all of them.
I love how that real casual lead in. Yeah. Hold on. Brought to you by Old Forester. Of course you do.
Yep.
Any particular reason you like all of them? I guess at 45 minutes.
It's one of those that I've spun numerous times over, that it's hit the point of like, I know them all by heart and I can get into every single track now. And so, I mean, it's just boom, 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 boom. If I had to choose a couple of like preferred, like, here's the plus, plus, pluses: Fixation on Darkness, My Last Serenade, I think it opens up with Numbered Days, and Vita Infra.
What do you think, Gabe?
So I liked some of the ones that have been mentioned so far. I would also point to Self Revolution.
Same.
Just Barely Breathing, To the Sons of Man, Good God, and Temple from Within. I don't think they do too good at closers a lot of the time. Mm-mm. Rise Inside is too long and not good at all. And fuck that instrumental.
Fuck that instrumental. Yeah, take it or leave it. I agree that run from Just Barely through like Temple from Within, that sort of middle of the album, is quite solid. But most of these are perfectly serviceable. Other than the instrumental, I won't go as far as Gabe, but he's not wrong.
Alrighty. Next up, we're looking at The End of Heartache, their third studio album. It was released on May 11th, 2004, through Roadrunner Records. It is the first album with Howard Jones on vocals. And the lineup is Adam Derkowitz on lead guitar. He's left the drumming chair. Backing vocals, producer and engineer, Joel Strotzel, rhythm guitar, backing vocals, Mike D'Antonio, bass, album artwork and layout, and Justin Foley's drums and percussion.
Perchance to dream.
Jesse Leach provides additional vocals on Take This Oath and Irreversal. Phil Abonte is additional vocals on Hope Is and Irreversal as well. It has a runtime of 42 minutes and 36 seconds. It was recorded at Zing Studios in Westfield, Massachusetts.
I didn't stray far from home. I had this album. This is the one that I got.
Yeah, because of this one was fucking everywhere.
It was everywhere, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll give this a chance. I don't regret that I have it. It's fine. I didn't listen to it a lot. Like, you know, I listened a few times when I got it, and I was done. It just wasn't heavy enough. But now I have to say, I don't know, overall, though it's not entirely going to be reflected in my rankings, I think I like Howard Jones a little more than Leach. He reminds me a bit of both Chuck Mosley and Mike Patton. I'm not going to say he's on Chuck Mosley being the vocalist before Mike Patton and Faith No More. I don't think he's quite at the level of Mike Patton, but he's got some of those same like aggression / soulful / sort of baritone. His voice is good.
Yeah,
he's had a rough go reading about him. I mean, between I think 2009 was just a shit show. That's when like they had to call the cops to stop him from committing suicide.
He had bouts of depression.
Yeah. He had to leave the band because of diabetes, which I'm like, oh shit. Type 2 diabetes just on the road wasn't tenable. I'm like, I guess I'm not touring with Morbid Angel.
But he's got that under control with his, and he's now touring with a different band.
With Ozempic. No, I don't know. He's probably living very differently now than he lived then. But yeah. So I had some empathy there with him. Shout out to all you type 2 diabetics. But his voice is good, and this got even poppier. I read a lot of reviews that really fucking hate this record. They said it was the black album of metalcore, and metalcore's Gravedigger. That's what they called this.
It's a bit dramatic, but I think that Howard Jones's vocals are really good. I just don't think that the compositions hold up in terms of like he can do so much, but I feel like the compositions get really boring here. In addition, it's like a very slow burn of an album. Like it's very, very mid tempo and just lots and lots of feels, but they kind of lose that fury from the previous album that we saw. I think that they may hit their stride in terms of like where they want to be. But that said, for me, it sounds, and we're like almost 20 years later, it sounds super formulaic to me because they, you know, were path breaking back then, or they were like sort of catching a lot of people's attention back then, and there were a lot of copycats. But it just strikes me as like very, very on the emo, like sort of safe emo side, whereas like the previous album feels much more dangerous. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. This is what I associate with their sound with being, because this is what I got on the ride. So I think that had an effect on sort of my assumption about what they sounded like. But Tracy.
I think this is the album where they do solidify their sound, though, because I mean, past this album, I think Adam Derkowitz becomes the primary songwriter, and to an extent, like I think he's where a lot of this stuff comes from, but the entire band is credited with songwriting. But he's definitely the straw that stirs the drink, to say. But I think this is where they really nailed that in their sound, and like you could tell a Kill Switch album from this point forward on being a Kill Switch album.
It's just going to be that Dutkiewicz or Derkowitz was a drummer initially in the band.
Yeah,
it's interesting. You don't see that flip very often.
Not very. I think he's one of those multi-instrumentalists, probably.
Well, if he were Devin Townsend, he'd have 12 solo albums and we'd know all about it.
If he could sing, he probably would. I think that's probably the thing keeping him doing.
He's backup vocaling, but yeah, I don't know what his him in front would sound like.
Well, when I saw him live and like sing some of these songs, like he does more of like the Fry vocal backup kind of thing, like where you have like the quick transition from like clean to Fry to clean, like he'll do the Fry in there so the singer doesn't have to try to modulate his voice that quickly. So that's kind of what he ended up doing.
Well,
yeah, I mean, this is definitely the one where a Kill Switch solidifies their sound.
Some people rank it as the best, other people despise it. It struck me as more divisive than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're into the emo stuff, you're going to like this. Like, it's, you know, no question. Like, if you're into other stuff that's kind of emo, you're going to like it.
If you are a 16 to 18 year old male, you're going to like this album. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, and a lot of this album, like, end up being on, like, movie soundtracks and stuff. So, I mean,
it has a lot of, like, that operatic feel to it, just because of that, you know, the power of Howard Jones's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it probably was impressive to a lot of people, that switching back and forth.
Yeah. And I think also because Howard's a black man doing this, like, and you don't see it very much in metal, too. Like,
I think not.
Like, I think there's like four or five black metal lead singers, like, known prominently within the genre. But I think he adds a soulfulness to it that I think Jesse lacked originally.
He's just better. I don't know about later. We can argue that because, man, is Jesse powerful by 2013, which is why I'm so curious about his spirit journey between those two time points. But yeah, Howard Jones is quite good.
Yeah.
And carries a lot, but I agree with Gabe, the writing could be. I don't think we're in A territory just because of the writing.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too, that some of the songs on this album that I really, really dig don't have Howard Jones singing on them. But it's not necessarily because of him. It's just the riffs are there, or like the songwriting is there. And it's not so, I don't know, immediately whiny, I guess.
We are immediately whiny from Westfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah, that was a band I was in.
And we're all filling it in our hearts.
No, but like when I was a teenager, of course, I was listening to stuff that was more like this, only like with zero, you know, metalcore stuff in it, or like very, very little.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that like I'm, you know, categorically opposed to it. It's just I'm not looking for that. If I were looking for that, I'd go on the softer end, or like on the more. So I also think that the problem here in like this middle area that we're working with this band, I don't think that they're catchy. Like all that catchy, like the vocals have melody, but I don't think anything else is like catchy to it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I do. I think Seven Dust actually, for example, is catchier. Just a comparison, a band that also relies on some of these elements, or I think even I would argue Soil Work, which at times sounds like this. I'm like, I see what Ben doesn't like. Like, because I like Soil Work, but I had to take a step back objectively. I, you know, some of those songs are pretty fucking catchy too.
They certainly are. I mean, you can like them pretty much against your will. We've seen that before.
The Swedish Model. But that's the contemporary of this, right? Like in terms of like metalcore, melodic death metal, there's some of those same drawing from pop and breaking slightly into the mainstream thing happening.
Yeah.
Some people would argue there's like a direct lineage with the melodic death metal.
For sure.
Uh-huh. And you hear some of that on this first record that we dealt with.
Yes.
Speaking of Ben earlier, his comments, a new vocalist and primary lyric writer with Howard Jones. I remember at the time debates about who was a better singer, Jesse or Howard. I give the win to Howard, especially when it comes to lyric writing. This is their best song album to date, helped a lot by the Tracy Effect soundtracks and wrestling tie-ins. Although honestly, the wrestling tie-ins were indie guys, so Tracy might have been aware of it. Although Adam did a pretty decent job as a drummer on the last album, but Tracy, I mean, Justin Foley, really did a great job. Adam also did the production on this album, just like the last one. I think he did a solid job. So yeah, it seems like Ben's like kind of about it.
It's an album.
I mean,
but he's got a pretty solid or like solidly formed opinion about the singing, which I'm not surprised about.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's anything like for most people in Oswald Killswitch, it's going to be Howard or Jesse is like the two like dominating, like who's like differences between, I guess you should say, Arabs, and then the music, you kind of get sidelined by that. Oh, we ready to talk about tracks or?
Sure.
Okay. I'll go. I'm going to say all of them. I really enjoy it's going to be all of them for every single one of these. Just put that out there. But the one I really enjoy, I Bid Farewell, Take This Oath. One of my favorite songs of all time is Rose of Sharon. The End of Heartache, Declaration.
You know, this album's pretty good. I agree with those. I would add probably Declaration of World Ablaze. I like World Ablaze. That's pretty good. I don't think this album ends very well either. I think they really do have, and part of the problem is I never knew what damn edition I was supposed to listen to. Every one of these has like three or four different, like, do I need to listen to the Dio cover? That's coming up in a second. Anyway, so I assume this, and I did listen to it, and it was their biggest hit until like 2013. Anyway, wow. Hope is the concluding track, right?
Yeah, you didn't like that?
That was okay, but I, you know, I don't think any of their end, I don't think
I thought that was cool. I like that one.
Well, you would. You're just trying to contradict.
It's got it's got nasty riffs, man. And like, I mean, say what you want. I would also just shout out When Darkness Falls. That's all right too. Mm. The instrumentals are very bad.
Let's see. Let me look at. Oh yeah, yeah. And Ember's Rise. Yeah, sure. Yeah, Hope is all right. I think I actually may be thinking of Irreversal. One problem is I'm listening to this walking around. Because some of those bonus tracks, again, I let this go on too long. I let it go on too long. I let it like drift into some of the other shit. And suddenly the album, instead of 45 minutes, was an hour and 5 minutes.
Wow.
Thanks, iTunes. And anyway, but that's the version they have. They've really cracked down on multiple versions a little bit, I've noticed lately. Anyway. But yeah, there's some, if you want to party like it's 2004 and I'm not there with Lamb of God, you might as well spin Rose of Sharon. I mean, that's about as 2004 as it gets. That would be the end of the heartache, I would imagine.
Ben. Or Rose of Sharon, Inhale, another cool palate cleanser, Breathe Life, and the End of Heartache.
He liked all the emo stuff.
Yeah. Ben, I'm noticing Ben sitting the hits, just boom, boom, boom.
The End of Heartache is that. I mean, that when I think of Killswitch Engage, that is the sound in my mind.
Sure.
Yeah. End of Heartache. Do, do, do. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's it right there. Encapsulated. This album cover is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's very emo, but that's fine.
I mean, it's just what are you going to get? What do you expect?
For the longest time, I thought it was Engaged. I don't know if that changes it at all. Well, I thought the switch had already been thrown, Gabe.
The kill switch is married.
So for the longest time, like I'm using like LimeWire and Kazai. Mm-hmm. Like, if you remember those apps, like it was listed as Killswitch Engaged. Like, I remember downloading some songs labeled as that.
I thought so too, actually. That's the thing. I think some of my confusion was from like Napster and BearShare and shit. Some of it was tagged that way. And so I think in my library there for a while, there was like, wait, what? both spellings?
Same on you, David.
Killswitch with a C and two Ys. I don't know. It's all.
See, it's not stealing. It's not spelled right.
We are Killswitch Betrothed from Eastfield, Massachusetts, which probably does exist somewhere in Gabe's heart, if nowhere else. East of Westfield is east.
It's my hometown.
My hometown, Eastfield, that I just made up.
It's in the ocean, guys.
Yeah, in the ocean. Is it time for Daylight to Die?
It is time for Daylight to Die. As Daylight Dies is their fourth studio album. It was released on November 21st, 2006 through Roadrunner Records. It was produced by Adam Derkowitz, again, with Joel Strotzel, also in the production chair. It was recorded at Zing Studios, Westfield, Massachusetts, and Longview Farm, North Brookfield, Massachusetts. Comes in at a brisk 43 minutes and 39 seconds. The lineup on this band is the same as the previous one. I actually don't think there's not a lot of turnover in the band besides like vocalist. Now that I think about it, maybe outside the early years, but like, once they get settled, they're in here for a lot. And writing credit is given to all members of the band with lyrics done by Howard Jones. So this is probably my favorite Howard album because I think they kind of like, in the other one, I feel like it was kind of written in like, in the sense like they play like with Jesse's vocalist in mind from Alive and Just Breathing. And I think with, on this one, Howard becomes like, the voice becomes an instrument in itself. Whereas it comes, I think it's better utilized on here. I think this one's probably better overall written and done.
In terms of turnover, I was just going to comment. They, from 2004 to 2023, only have their vocalist change. That's it. Everything else is the same.
Gotcha.
It's a long run. It's over two decades.
Yeah. It's better than most bands between albums.
For sure. Especially some of the ones we like, unfortunately. But that's how it goes. So you were already way well onto this ride by this point, right, Tracy?
Correct.
Like when this came out. Yeah. Did you like anticipate it and get it when it was new?
I didn't anticipate it. I knew it was a thing, though. I mean, this was coming out like, so I was in basic for the military late August into early March. So like I kind of like knew an album was coming out, but that wasn't as much as I knew. Like, I didn't get this until 07, 08, kind of, because that's when I was like, oh, I got to catch up on all the shit I missed while I was out, you know? So, because I'm looking at it, yes, because they premiered the single for Holy Diver on a video on their MySpace page August 1st.
Amazing. Of 2006, you mean?
Yeah. No, that was 2007. Shit. So I might not have actually, now that I think of it, I might not have known this thing was existence yet.
Yeah, it dropped in November of 06.
So I might have been into, but had not heard this album until much later because of life. But yeah, like, this has become probably one of my favorite ones. And for me, my first go around in college from like late 07 to early 09 was when I really had these guys, Scar Symmetry, Trivium, on spin, like nonstop. Like, those were like the main four bands I kind of, three bands I kind of played with and like listened to a lot. Surprise, surprise to nobody. Was this y'all's, this your first listens on this album? Or?
Yep.
What are y'all's thoughts on it? Or should I throw Ben in the bus first? And
either way.
Let's throw Ben in the bus. The fourth album in 6 years, following hellacious touring schedule for the last two albums. I think this is the album where they solidify the Killswitch sound. I can't say that I'm a fan. A lot of the songs are heavy, but also samey and safe. The production is fine. There's some tasty bass playing in places. It just is in the middle alts morass of sound that does nothing for me.
I think I would agree with him that it feels safe and maybe somewhat samey. I have some of the same problems with this album as I did with the last album. I just don't think it's like super, super interesting to listen to. That's not to say that there aren't any good songs on it. I do think there are some good songs, but I think also there are some parts of this where the vocals sound auto-tuned.
Yes, I was going to say something. I was like, and is that auto-tune, motherfucker?
Really, really not here for that, even if it wasn't what they were trying to do. It's not good. Not good at all. Yeah, so like it's tough for me to say. I think that they still have a lot of sort of like typical emo stuff on this, and it's like, okay.
I don't understand why they use, I'm pretty sure it's auto-tune, and that is this era, but why? Like, I don't feel like he needs it, but who knows what's going on. If they were recording this, I'm a little surprised, because his voice is genuinely good, which is not always true of people that he's auto-tune with.
Well, so according to Wikipedia, it says that, so it's God-given fact, must take it as it is, it's written in stone, sure, that a lot of his depression issues actually came up from due to the rise of Killswitch as like popularity. So I think it might have been the pressure. Like, I think this is where he starts to have some more of the mental health issues, is probably during the writing process of this album, because you start to see Killswitch take off, you get into some of the popularity, and maybe like the internal pressure of trying to live up to that fame himself while also doing this album, I think might have been where you start to see like the cracks in the facade of Howard Jones. And that might be part of it. It's just
you mean the album cover?
Yeah, maybe. That might be part of it as well. Like, the Brett from Howard to draw it like this, let them understand what it's like being Howard Jones in Killswitch.
Well, I know they were touring constantly. I mean, that's broken bands before.
Yeah. Iron Maiden.
That's the one I was thinking of. Like, shit. So yeah, I like Howard Jones, but and maybe they've deployed him in some ways more effectively, but something slipped here. Like, when I heard that auto-tune thing, I didn't catch it the first couple times I listened to it, but I guess it was yesterday. I was like, what the fuck?
Where are you talking about? Because I don't know if I could pick it out now, like if I could point to it.
Gabe is absolutely right. It comes up a couple times.
Once when I really noticed it was This Is Absolution.
Yes.
And, you know, it's funny too. Like, I definitely didn't like this album very much, like all of the times that I listened to it. Even when I found stuff to like about it, I was just like, I just don't. And the first two records grew on me so much, you know, like I just had so much of a better time when I heard them more. But yeah, something about this one is a little bit off.
I agree with that.
I mean, it could be, you know, they're using the production to achieve a more glossy, finesse-y kind of sound. I don't generally like that anyway, but maybe that's what they're going for. And there is such thing, you know, I also should say I'm like not categorically opposed to auto-tune, but I think a lot of times unnecessary. And I think Howard Jones does not need it.
He doesn't need it. Yeah, you'll see it reflected in the grading. This one to me was the weakest of the four we did this week.
Interesting, because I'm on the inverse of that.
No, we didn't get agree. Yeah, this one's a couple. It's just off slightly. The nine, even the one from 2009, apparently even more so.
The one with the 2009, I think, is a hot mess, and a hot mess. That's the nicest way I could put it. I think that's when the wheels fell off of it, because like they released one single, and you kind of like, hey, this isn't bad, but the rest of it was just trash. Oof. That's the nicest way to put it.
And that's the last one Howard Jones was on, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now he has done a couple of guest spots on the one from 2019. Like I think there's a track both him and Jesse do vocals on.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, so my understanding is like the band and him are still cool. It's just obviously he left due to health reasons.
Yeah.
I'll be ready to do tracks on this one, or
sure.
Yep.
Okay.
I can go first because I haven't gone yet. My list is relatively short. Is his short?
Yeah, his is short too.
Okay.
What you go first? So
I think Daylight Dies is an all right opener. I also like The Arms of Sorrow, My Curse, For You. The closer is just okay.
Ben has only listed The Arms of Sorrow. For me, I think it opens well with As Daylight Dies, The Substitution. I'm sorry, My Curse is pretty damn good. Break the Silence, V1. And then, of course, This Fire and Holy Diver, I fucking love that. I think those are both on the special edition, though. So
I moved over to that and listened to it today. Yeah. It's a pretty good cover. I'm not a huge Dio fan, but
when I saw them live, they did this and Joey Belladonna, because it's how they ended the night, is I think on that tour, Anthrax and Killswitch were alternating who was ending, and they would play Holy Diver, and the lead singer from either band would come out, and like they'd close on Holy Diver with the bands. So it's like a neat little touch.
Anthrax playing Holy Diver. Be awesome. Huh? I said Anthrax playing Holy Diver. Yeah. Awesome. There's some, I don't have a whole lot to add to any of that. Eye of the Storm's pretty good. I like the Dio cover. But in general, I thought this was, as you'll see from my grade, it's perfectly serviceable. It is an album, but I thought it was the weakest of these four, which is a shame because I said I really like Jones's vocals, but it just, they don't quite land here.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Disarm the Descent. We get Jesse back with their sixth studio album. It's released on April 2nd, 2013 under Roadrunner Records. It was recorded at Wicked Good Studios and Zing Studios. Both are in Westfield, Massachusetts. Runtime of 40 minutes and 40 seconds. A lineup outside of Jesse is the same it's been for every other album that's been on here. Adam Duckowitz is sitting in the production chair. Anything else?
I appreciate their commitment to continue recording in Westfield because I feel like a lot of bands get sucked into the gravitic pull of like LA or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Well,
you know, the studio is wicked good, kid.
There it is.
I wonder if that's like.
There it is. The mass holes at the edge of the chat. Yeah, I knew it was. What choice do you have? Anyway, this album is pretty well produced, it's faster.
This album tops the last one we heard in like almost every way.
Agreed.
It goes hard back in the melodic death metal direction.
Indeed.
There's super fancy guitar work compared to the last two records we heard. The vocals are, you know, they feature gang vocals. It's super catchy. Like it's just, it hooks you in so much. The last two records kind of push you away for me. It's like, this is a, you know, it's like At the Gates vibes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
indeed,
and I'm saying that with also like the caveat that there is some butt rock on here.
There's some butt rock here, but it's catchy. And no, I agree with you. It's like faster. It's heavier. They've moved out of that slightly unfortunate mid tempo space. Some bands do that pretty well, but it didn't quite gel. I felt like
I think also last album with metalcore stuff. Like I really want to be able to tell that it's a breakdown when the breakdown happens, exactly. Not that like we're kind of in the middle of like maybe a bridge. Or something. You know, it's like, is it a breakdown if you can't tell it's a breakdown?
It's a bridge down.
If a breakdown happens and no one can tell it's a breakdown,
does it make a sound?
Did it still happen?
It did not. If nobody break dances, then no.
It's philosophical break question.
Dancing.
But this, this album, I thought this was the strongest of the four we listened to. His vocals have dramatically improved. And are quite strong on here. Yeah, I'm okay with, I don't mind pop. I mean, I actually listen to pop. It just needs to actually be catchy and successful. And I think it really is here compared to some of the other stuff we've heard. I can't believe this is a decade old, but it is.
Yep. This is my favorite Jesse album by far. And I think it's really shows. And I was honestly, when they announced that he was coming back, I was going, okay, I don't know how I feel about it. But then here it is. Was part like his fry vocals are where they were with the line just breathing, but I think his clean vocals have just jumped significantly
exponentially. Here, it's not even like, close.
Holy shit.
And so it's rare you see that shit, because usually you don't see a vocalist in the same band with like a 10-year gap or whatever, right? Yeah. Like as they develop, it's intense. He's good here, and I agree with Gabe. They as a unit lean into the melodic death metal, their melodic death metal roots. It's good shit.
Yeah.
It's almost even a little power metal-y at times.
A little bit. Yeah, I agree with that. I figured it would just make Tracy like it all the more.
I mean, I dug this fucking album. That's not a... there's not underselling it by any means.
So you were way into this band by this point, right?
Yeah, like I was...
a decade of commitment.
Yeah. I don't know if like a decade commitment, but like by the time this album came out, I was into it. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to hear it and check it out. And this is by the time streaming was already out. So, I mean, I was like Spotify immediately. Like, all right, here we go. But it is very weird that you do see this singer like in that kind of style. Like you see it with like Judas Priest and Killswitch, not Killswitch, Iron Maiden, but you don't really see it very often where like, this lead singer comes back like this. I don't know. It's such an interesting touch.
Anthrax. Johnny Villadonna.
That's just like throw a singer in a blender and whatever you get. Like that's like a Lardy Ball system when they go into her. Which one are we going with this time? Ben's notes. Hey, everybody. Jesse is back. He sounds as good as he did on the first album, but his lyric writing hasn't improved in the intervening 11 years. Again, if you're a fan of this sound, this is probably an okay listen. But to me, this is essentially the heavier metalcore cousin of Five Finger Death Punch without the catchiness. Empty. He goes on. Empty calories and not even tasty ones.
So say that last bit. Amazing. Say that last sentence again.
This is essentially a heavier metalcore cousin of Five Finger Death Punch without the catchiness.
That's low, man.
That's brutal.
I take offense to that. Yeah, that's some offensive shit.
Wait till you get to the greats. Like
oh shit.
I've outdone myself on this one for
now. Oh really? Oh no. F Holster. A new grade G minus is it shared?
Dual wielding F holsters. That's what that is.
This is the F Gatling gun. He's just rotating it, feeding ammo in the top.
What is it for? We have the Maxim gun quote during colonization.
Whatever happens, we have got the Maxim gun, and they have not.
That is Ben with this album right here in F
holsters. Shit, man.
With this spot.
Yikes. Massive casualties. Well, I guess we'll see that in a moment. We talk about grades. Anything else before we song it?
Nothing I can think
of. Oh, man.
I'll do tracks. I'll do bands first. None. But for me, I'm going to say all of them again. I think In Due Time is fucking fantastic on here. Always a nice little ballad there. A tribute to the Fallen. Like, this album is pretty damn good. What about you guys?
I think they're right.
Yeah, I'm going to say that same thing. This whole thing's pretty fun. Fire it up.
Let me enter Ben's grades into this Wayback Machine real quick. So I don't got to worry about entering those.
I think I'm going to give these much higher grades than Ben, sounds like.
I think all of us are going to give these much higher grades
than Ben. Shit, dude.
But yeah, it's not pretty.
Has that moment arrived?
I think that moment has arrived. Alive and Breathing. Alive and Just Breathing. Benjamin gave this album a D.
Oh shit.
I'm gonna give this album an A minus, a 91.
I'm gonna give this album an 85, a solid B. I like the aggression and sort of the rawness of it, and it's got some good riffs, as Gabe said. So 85.
Well, I'm gonna be the meat in that sandwich and give this a B plus. It's between this and another one that are my favorite for this session.
Meat sandwich. That
gives us an average of 82. I'd buy this album. Ben would not.
I would.
I think I would, actually. Often I say no to B albums, but this is all right. Sure, why not? Poof. I bought the one after it, so.
Yeah. I think the bigger question is, would you rebuy them now after the fact?
I like it more now than I did then, yeah. I think. I'm more likely to buy it now than to rebuy it back then, which I know doesn't make sense. Like, if someone stole it from me, I probably would not replace it.
But now you're like, well, fuck.
You know. All right. Next.
The end of Heartache, Ben gave this his highest grade for the night with a C+.
Shit, man. I'm going to... I like this in some ways about the same as the previous one, because I like how aggressive it was. But it was sort of genre-defining, so I'll bump it up a little bit. I'm going to give this one an 86.
Yeah, I'm going to take that down a little bit. I like some of the songs on this, but it's definitely not what I'm looking for. But I don't think that this is like, you know, I'm not going to descend into the coward's refuge of C+. It's going to be an 80.
Yeah, and any posers who give a 79, step off. And Murray, it's the same as an 89, man. We only have whole letter grades. So.
Yeah, same in my institution. There's no such thing.
Got no pluses or minuses.
I'm going to give this one a B+, an 88. I think this is an average of 83. I'd buy this album.
I would maybe buy a couple of singles, but that's it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I already bought it once. What could have hurt? You get three copies of Time Cop for only $19.99.
Yeah. As Daylight Dies, Ben gives this one an F.
Oof. I'm going to come down not nearly that far. I think this is the weakest of these four. I'm going to give this an 83. I think it's still a B. I mean, this some good shit on here, but it's the lowest B possible.
I was going to say, based off what he talked about in his, I'm giving this one a 55.
Yeah, sure. I trust your judgment.
Because he kind of had a little like, it's okay, but blah, blah, blah moments into it.
Sure.
So there's hope. He pulled a track off of it. We'll go with that.
What is that? One out of 12 tracks?
I guess. Unless you went to the special edition and got like one out of 16.
Sorry, shit. one out of 11 tracks. I can't really decide whether I like this, you know, better or worse than the last one. I'm just going to give both of them 80s. I don't really know how to, because I think it would be wrong and also cowardly to give both of them a C+ when I actually like a few tracks on each of them, and it's more than like three.
I mean, don't you want them to get into medical school in Amherst or wherever they would go? With?
Well, they're not getting into medical school with this one.
Shit, they're not going to get with a B average. They're not going to get in, David. So
no, not with. Also, it's what is the final average you say just now, Tracy? 78.
Yeah.
Shit.
And if they're not getting into
medical school, Holster strikes again. You're going to medical school in Grenada.
I would. Would you buy it?
Nah.
No.
I would.
I get that.
Alrighty, Disarm the Descent.
I thought this was the best one. I'm going to give this one an 88. It's a solid performance.
I'm there too with a B+.
Yeah.
Alrighty, Benjamin gave this an F.
I don't Headshot. Understand why he's so Killing cranky spree. About it. This makes no sense to me, but hey.
I guess the Minneapolis got to him. I don't know.
You don't like it, you don't like it.
Maybe this is like the periphery where it just all just kind of built up over and over and over. Just like, fuck it all. Like, it's just, by the time we got through it, it's like, I'm done. And just shit's
I mean, he said it was worse than Five Finger Death Punch. Yeah. So, or not this one. I guess that was the next one.
So, but... this is Disarm Descent. So, like,
oh, yeah, this one.
Yeah. So I gave it, due to his comments, I give it a 45 because he kind of shit on this album comparatively.
Amazing. The other one. So, what's our average? 73 or something?
I gave it a 96.
Well, that helps.
This was a 79.
Not much, though.
Which, interesting enough, prior to doing this blast, I would have probably put Alias Daylight Dies above this album.
Really?
Yes.
I'm part of it is I know you just listened to it a ton. That was like your ear.
It's been for the longest, like outside of like hearing the album the first couple times, like I put it on a playlist and hit random on the playlist. And so, like, it's been a long time since I sat down and listened to like these albums like start to finish next to each other as like a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
When you actually think about it, it's like, man, I thought this album was good, but then I put it up because this one, it's not as good.
But blasts do that. That's weird. Because again, I really don't listen to bands this way. I'm Team Tracy. Just this playlist has 1,600 songs on it. And it's on random. So I just get, here's the Slayer. Here's the Churches. Here's the, you know.
It's just a weird
Here's a Gwar. Nothing this is Gwar. Such a
a weird medium doing it, because then you're just essentially just like, unless you sit down and like, I'm going to listen to these albums from start to finish. Now, there were times I wrote a couple of papers, like I would put a band discography blast, like this entire discography. I'm like, I haven't heard this in a while, and listen to them from start to finish while writing a paper. I did that with Opeth a couple of times. But yeah. That was Kill Switch. I think it seems like we all had a good time, except for one of us with it.
Except for one of us who hated it.
Yeah.
Speaking of hating shit, what are we doing to ourselves next?
Next, we're definitely continuing the realm of hate as we're doing part two of Ben's Acid Bath Goat Horror Blast for the year.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we get that to look forward
to. I think it's just goat horror, right?
Yeah, it's just goat horror because we're there in our Acid Bath, but it's four albums of goat horror.
Acid Bath will live on in our hearts, Tracy.
Yeah, I feel like four albums of Acid of a goat horror is still just a mighty pill to swallow.
I wouldn't disagree with that, and we'll see what happens because we had some opinions about that first half of this.
Yeah, I mean, sure to God, they're not as bad as that first Gahor album was. But yeah. All right. Yeah, it was nice to get these out there. I know we talked about it off discuss and threatened, so I'm glad I got that out there now. Even if some parties did not enjoy them as much.
It happens, man.
Yep.
We've also threatened a Converge blast, but I don't know if that's actually on the horizon.
I think Ben would hate us.
Mandatory suicide.
Well, on that note,
thanks for tuning in here on Thunderdome Metal Reviews.
Yeah, host a broke ass macaw.